Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Agnes. Thank you, Rowan and Tim, for leading us so far. Matthew chapter 7, the end of the Sermon on the Mount. Next week, we'll be starting our specific focus in preparation for Easter. So do come back as we turn to the end of Matthew's Gospel. But let's spend time on these words. But let me first ask you, have you ever gone ice skating? And you know, when you go ice skating, you don't bring your own skates. You hand in your shoes and you get these... Well, they're actually not very comfortable skates anyway, but have you ever had it that actually you got the wrong size and they were a size too small? I mean, you cope for a little while, don't you? But your features get colder and colder and more sore. I mean, that is uncomfortable. If you have a sibling, ever had your older brother, in my case, sit right on top of you and run his knees over, I guess they're called biceps, but at 7 or 8 years old, there wasn't much there. But I tell you, rolling those knees over my upper arms was rather uncomfortable. Or have you ever worked with staples? And staples are meant to go into paper and when you're stapling them together, but actually by accident you get a staple in your finger. You ever had that? Now that is uncomfortable, isn't it? And yet people, none of these comes even close to how uncomfortable Jesus' words are to us today. Read with me again, verse 22 and verse 23, where Jesus says to the crowd and to us today that on that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do mighty works in your name? And if you were to pause there, you wonder, what would Jesus' reply be? Well done. No, instead, Jesus says that I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness, or literally, you law breakers. Now allow that to sink in for a moment. It seems that the Bible teaches us that there's really only two things that Jesus will say when we die on that day of Judgment Day. Either this, I never knew you, depart from me, or well done, you good and faithful servant. But if you're not yet a Christian and you're here today, you might take these words and say, actually, that is incredibly harsh and incredibly unfair. Isn't Jesus supposed to be loving and accepting, especially when people are trying their best? Here are people who've done mighty works, it says, who've prophesied in his name. They seem to be doing the right thing. Should Jesus not say, come on right in? But even for Christians, these words can cause these beads of sweat to appear on our forehead. For how many of us here today do not call Jesus Lord and are in service to him, doing mighty works in his name? Then what may these words mean to us? I mean, at the end of this amazing Sermon on the Mount, we do get an amazing picture, don't we, in verse 28 and verse 29, where we find that when Jesus finishes his sayings, the crowds were astonished at his teaching. I couldn't help but smile and think, wow, a lot of people must have been grasping what Jesus was teaching, and they were amazed, they were astonished. And you think good things are going to come from this. A lot of people are going to start following him. But really the question and the things that Jesus have just said, you wonder about how many of these in the crowd will ultimately actually enter into the kingdom. This is sobering, isn't it? I mean, it is evident that Jesus does not want any of us to be grievously self-deceived. He wants us very much to understand what it means to be an authentic Christian. He wants us to be able to distinguish from what is true and from what is false. He wants to recognize the possible dangers and the consequences to each one. There is a choice to be made. Throughout this passage, Jesus speaks of two types of prophet. He speaks of two types of foundations. And he speaks of two roads or two entrances to those roads. And so the questions that he seems to be laying before us is, what foundation are we choosing to build our life upon? Who are we choosing to listen to? And what road are we choosing to travel on? Maybe behind me you see the picture When I grew up, I helped my dad in a Christian bookshop. He volunteered and we ran this bookshop together. But this is one of the pictures that we sold as a poster, and it always intrigued me. It slightly scared me as well, but it intrigued me how on the left-hand side you've got the broad road, and on the right-hand side you've got this narrow road, and there's lots of verses and passages, and you see kind of where both of them end up. And I often wondered what that meant to me. But let's read those words together when Jesus explains how there are two roads. And he says, enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction. And those who enter by it are many. But for the gate which is narrow and the way that is hard, it leads to life. And those who find it are few. A couple of observations about the narrow and the broad road. First of all, Jesus seems to imply that actually everyone is on a road to a spiritual destination. No exception. Your faith, whatever that may be, is taking you somewhere, whether that faith believes that there is a God or not, whether you believe that there is an afterlife or not, that road, based on your faith, will lead you to a destination. There's no neutrality. Actually, as we see so often, there's no sitting on the fence. We're either on the broad road or the narrow road, and with that, the choice is limited. I don't know if you remember the first time you went to a Starbucks or a Costa Coffee. Well, I remember the first time standing behind someone and growing up really just thinking you either get a coffee with milk and sugar or black and, you know, with sugar. The options are very limited. And here was someone in front of me who was just rattling off all these different choices that, you know, he wanted about his coffee. And I think we've gotten used to the idea that there should be a lot of choice. When we go to the supermarket, we don't just want one type of cereal, but we want hundreds of types to choose from. But here Jesus explains that actually there are not many roads all leading to one destination, but there are two roads going to two destinations. Secondly, one road is easy and the other is hard. Now, if we're very honest, this is not good marketing, is it? If you want to explain Christian faith to anyone, this is not enticing them to say, the way to enter and to become a Christian, you go through this narrow road and you choose this difficult path. When I think of narrow, I think of those turnstiles at Murrayfield. There's lots of them, so that's not the illustration I'm trying to use, but if you've ever been at Murrayfield, quite often, particularly if you have a bag on your back, you go sideways through the turnstile because they're so narrow. Or maybe you've been at these airports, and I particularly don't like the new ones where you have to stand and they scan your whole body thing. They need to make them taller. But of course, that's not what narrow seems to be referring to here, for the narrow simply means that it's only through Jesus, who himself said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, that we can enter into the kingdom of heaven. Now, don't let us confuse this by the fact that even though the entrance is narrow, the invitation has gone out broadly. It's gone out to everyone. This is common grace. But there's not many roads that lead to heaven. Only through Jesus do we come to the Father. And this choice is very much an act of the will. See how Jesus explains that this gate that is narrow and the way that is hard that leads to life, it says only a few will find it. We don't stumble into becoming a Christian. We need to seek it. We need to search for it. And then when we find it, we need to choose to enter into it. But thirdly, what may help us is if we understand the destination. That may help us and entice us to go through the narrow entrance. One of the commentators explained the two roads. Both have the shape of a cone. Have you ever had an ice cream cone? Well, one of those cones, but then sideways. So you've got a broad end and a narrow end, a pointy bit. Well, the description of these two roads is that one seemingly starts as broad but ends in narrow, but the other one starts narrow but ends in broad. Because what are the two destinations? One is destruction. The other one is life. What starts narrow finishes incredibly broad, life in all its fullness. And fourthly, I wanted us to realize as well that maybe who is on each of these roads may surprise us. I remember growing up thinking, okay, so it's the bad people, of course, that choose the broad road. You know, if that's the perspective from a Christian. Or certainly, these are the people who are selfish and they're uncaring. They probably don't want anything to do with religion. They want to live their own life. They want to live it up. That's the people on the broad road. But if you're here a couple of weeks ago, you may remember that actually in the Sermon on the Mount, there's two contrasts here. There's people living with God and people living without God, but there's also people that Jesus refers to as the religious ones. The religious ones somehow do live with God, but in a way that God just becomes part of your life, but really what you're relying is on your own self-righteousness. And really who he particularly was addressing were the religious leaders, the Pharisees and the scribes, who stuck to all the rules, but really to earn God's acceptance and His grace. So Jesus says there's a third contrast or another contrast here, not bad versus good, but good versus good. So when you look at verse 23, the description of these people who call Jesus Lord, Lord, and having done all these mighty works, to whom Jesus says, I never knew you, depart from me, are the description of the religious ones. They're the ones that may have had a perfect orthodox doctrine of Jesus, calling him Lord. So rationally, they've got it all right. They may even know the Bible better than any of us. And in serving him, it looks like they were emotionally involved. So it's more than just even lip service. And yet all of this, the calling of Jesus as Lord, Lord, and serving him seems to have been the right thing, but for the wrong reason. It was very much a look at our accomplishments and attitudes, God, and you will have accepted me, to which Jesus ultimately will say on Judgment Day, I never knew you. Now again, notice how he uses the word knew. This is not, that he doesn't know about us, that he doesn't know our name or where we live or what we do in everyday life. It's a word that explains a relationship. He never knew us. There was no relationship, and the word never means that there was never any relationship. God never knew us because we never allowed him to know us. So that's the sobering truth that Jesus wants us to be clear about, the narrow road and the broad road. So of course, then the question is this morning, so how do we know that we're on the right road, the road to life? Well, Jesus answered this question himself in verse 21 when he says, not everyone who says, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but who will? The one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Now, what's the key word here? The key word is Father. This is a term which doesn't talk of an abstract relationship with God as God being far away or a God. This is a personal relationship with God as our Father. And how is God described as Father in the Bible? Well, he's described as the one full of love and compassion, like the father who was on the lookout for his wayward child to return. And when he returned home, he couldn't wait but put the robe around his shoulders and reinstate him as his son by putting around his finger the secret ring of acceptance and killing the fatted calf so that a feast could be given and celebrations could be had, for the son had returned who was dead but is now alive. That is the God of the Bible, the God who cares, who's full of wisdom, and who's committed to his children. For we mustn't confuse that. What Jesus seems to be saying is that obedience means entrance. For God, through Jesus' obedience, has saved us. And his forgiveness is a pure gift of grace. It's not first the road and then the gate, but it's first the gate and then comes the road. However, it's clear in the Bible that God's salvation is never static, that it inevitably results in a desire to please God through good works. Why? Because this is a response to His love, His Father's love to us, but it's also an expression of ours to His. Let me explain it slightly differently. If God were a boss, what you try to do is you try to impress Him, and you try to impress Him in order to either earn your salary or to climb a career ladder. That's how work works. But if God is your Father, there is nothing more to earn. There's nothing more to earn or acceptance to achieve. The rope we've already received, the ring is already around our finger. The celebrations have already begun. See, instead, if God is our Father, we, as His children, we love Him in return and we trust the Father. We trust Him for His wisdom and His protection and guidance, and we very much want God to direct our life. It's like a little child looking up to his dad, proud and trusting, until his dad becomes embarrassing. But God will never embarrass us, will He? God, Jesus explains, is never someone we simply acknowledge or to use to get what we want while we continue to be in control of our own life, deciding ourselves, you know, who to forgive or whether to sleep with someone or not. But authentic Christians surrender their will. Authentic Christians surrender their will. To truly have God in your life is to give up your own will. And so the question this morning is God truly your Father? Is that how you know Him? I was thinking about this idea of surrendering, and I believe most of us struggle with the idea of surrendering, don't we? But I've always thought that actually why we struggle with surrendering is because we're proud people, and we often think we know better. But now I'm not so sure. I think many of us actually are very happy to say, you know what? I'm not that clever or that wise. I need someone else's help. But you know the real reason why we struggle to surrender? It's because so many of us live with the fear of losing control. We live in fear of losing control. And that is the most scariest thing for many of us in life. And in life, we'll try to do whatever we can to keep control. But people, Jesus wants us to be clear that if we try in our spiritual life to keep control, we are not on the narrow road that leads to life. Jesus tries to explain this by the second picture, and that is the picture of the two houses. In verse 24 and following, he talks about he who hears the words of mine and does them is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And when the storms came, it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. Here's the key thing about these houses. The key thing about these houses is that actually, if we'd been able to see them, they would have looked very much alike. But the difference with these houses is that their foundation, what's underneath, what is not seen, is radically different. And actually, the truth is, I would say that only one of these houses has a foundation. Who remembers the extension being built and us showing these photographs of this digger? Anybody remember? I couldn't find the photograph, but we had these photographs of this little digger in the gravelly bit before the extension was built, and it just kept going down and down and down. It was one of the delays. Do you remember we had some delays with the building of the extension? Yeah. Well, that was one of them, and it kept going down. Why? Because there was sand. Now, sand is nice to play with, but it's not a foundation. Its shiftiness doesn't make it usable for it. Everybody knows that. So we needed to get rid of the sand to get down to solid ground for the foundation. So do you see what Jesus is getting at? One is actually a house which doesn't have a foundation. It just put the house on sand. And really, it's relying on its own materials and its own strengths, its own achievements, its own cleverness, its own abilities to stay standing. But it's people who go through the narrow gate and have God as their Father are the ones that have a foundation that is not ourselves, that is not us. A foundation that is the rock, which is Jesus Christ himself, the Son of God the Father, his finished work, his grace, his lordship, to whom we then completely and utterly and daily say, for me to live is Christ. That's what it means for Jesus to be our foundation. Every day we get up that morning and say, for me to live is Christ. Your will be done, not mine. So again, the question is, so what is our foundation? Who are we really living for? And let's be honest with ourselves. Are we living for ourselves, or are we truly and utterly living for God? For if God is our heart's desire, then serious, worshipful obedience is the right response. But one last thought. So we've looked at the two roads, we've looked at the two houses, but there was something else Jesus was talking about, wasn't it, in verse 15 and 16. He warns his listeners, he says, beware of false prophets or pseudo-prophets. So again, these would have been people that would have looked the part and probably would have said the right things, but actually Jesus says they are like wolves in sheep clothing. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they're ravenous wolves. And he says, you will recognize them by their fruits. Do you know what Jesus is doing here? Of course, he is warning us to be aware of people who will actually entice us away from God and say, you know what? These two roads don't matter. Why did you come and join everybody else? You know, come join the crowd. It's much more fun. It's much less hard. Come join us on the broad road. But actually, by warning us for false pseudo-prophets, Jesus actually invites each one of us as listeners to test him also. He's almost saying, and putting himself under the scrutiny, he's saying, but how do you know that I'm not a false teacher? Well, how do we know that Jesus is not a false prophet? Jesus says, check out the fruit. Check out the fruit. Well, wasn't Jesus the one who actually practiced what he preached? Who asking of us to daily take up our cross and follow him, did exactly the same himself? And rather than being a wolf in sheep's clothing, looking innocent while he's out to destroy for his own gain, is he not the one who was the lamb who was led to the slaughter, who was beaten and who was mocked, ridiculed, nailed to a cruel cross, dying the excruciating death to deal with our sin so that we may have life? The crowd certainly recognized Jesus wasn't a false prophet. They were astonished, as we started our service with. However, may God grant that none of us will stop at mere amazement and astonishment, but may each one of us choose the narrow gate and to press on to that deeply rooted commitment which says, be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. Naught be all else to me save that thou art. Thou my best thought by day or by night, waking or sleeping, thy presence my light. Be thou my wisdom. Thou my true word, I ever with thee and thou with me, Lord. Thou my great Father, I thy true Son, thou in me dwelling and I with thee one. High King of heaven, after victory won, may I reach heaven's joys. O bright heaven's Son, heart of my own heart, whatever befall, still be my vision, O ruler of all. Let's pray together. And as we take time to pray, I want to ask you to pause and to listen for what God may be speaking to you specifically, and then to respond. So we're going to have a moment of quietness, which can feel uncomfortable, but I think it's too important to not respond to Jesus' words. Both words of challenge, but also words of encouragement. That if we are, and if we've chosen the narrow road, that we're on the road to life. But also that if we've made Jesus Christ our foundation, difficult things will come into our lives. Storms, cyclones, But a house will remain standing right to the very end until Jesus says, well done. So let's take a moment of quietness and allow God to speak to each one of us.